T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
103. We'll get to Adam's news in about 4 minutes. Let's get to the Wolves story that broke late Friday that still a lot of Wolves fans are talking about right now. Kyrie Irving, the one-time world champion, 3 straight trips to the NBA Finals, and a fantastic player, went to the Cavs 2-3 weeks ago, said, "I want out." Now, how the story broke eventually is rather interesting. Now there's some rumors that LeBron was so ticked off about it that LeBron was the one who made sure it got out there in classic LeBron passive-aggressive way. The reason why it resonated here is, according to the very good reporting, that there were, 4 teams that were mentioned? The Spurs, the Knicks, the Heat, and, yes, the Timberwolves. And the organization for 13 years, for most of the 13 years, has been a laughingstock. And the idea that you would get a guy as talented as Irving, still young, he's in the prime of his career because he's 25 and he entered the league after, 1 year Duke. What consider here is revolutionary. So then you get to, can they make it work? They can't just trade Wiggins for him. Wiggins is the one name that makes sense, right? But Wiggins, until the new contract kicks in, and that's not kicking in this year, it's kicking in another year, okay? Then the money doesn't match up. You always have to remember, they have to come within 20% of the money, and there's an enormous disparity. If it was purely talent for talent, and money didn't matter, and the Cavs are going to say, okay, you want to be traded? Sure. What do we want in return? We want a young, great player who isn't a rookie, but who's established himself with some gravitas. Among all the options out there, among the teams that have been mentioned, by far Andrew Wiggins is the best pick. Okay, but again, the money doesn't add up. Jeff Teague, this has worked this way for a long, long time. When you sign a player as a free agent, you can't trade him till December 15th. The idea is you can't just sign a guy to make another deal. Now, even if Jeff Teague was signed, I think people are losing this one. The Cavaliers are not going to trade Kyrie Irving for a middle-of-the-pack point guard. And then a bunch of people were mad at the Wolves because if you had Rubio, you could have traded him. No, the Cavaliers wouldn't have traded him for a guy who I like a little better than Teague, but they still wouldn't have traded Kyrie Irving for Ricky Rubio. Now, the question becomes, would you do it if somehow you could cobble together other superfluous pieces? And the Wolves don't have those. They'd have to put Gorgie in there. And he's not a superfluous piece. He's somebody who's going to play quite a bit. Would you trade Irving for Wiggins? The argument against is Andrew hasn't come close to reaching what you hope is his potential. He's already a magnificent scorer. But the idea was when they made the deal, he was going to be this two-way player. He's going to be able to guard people. He's going to be able to pass. He's going to be able to handle the ball. He's going to be able to rebound. And as a scorer, the guy already is about a 9. Those other areas, for me, early, major disappointment for the expectations I had for him in those areas. Let's be clear, not as a player, because he's still so young. But I just thought he would be better in those areas. Andrew is still younger than Kyrie, and Kyrie's 25. But would I do it? Absolutely, I would do it. Because you are getting the toughest big game shot maker in the league today. You are getting one of the 3 or 4 best point guards in the game today. Now, he's had some health issues. He's got more wear and tear on him, but he's 25 years old. He's about as good defensively as I am. He's not a good defensive player. right? So you'd have to do that. But the point guard position is so important, I would do it. But with all the monetary situation that would have to come and play, I think it is borderline impossible. Now, if you did something, you had to play Kyrie Irving and Teague for a few months, oh, in a millisecond. That's narrow window. But, man, what's going on with Cleveland and how Dan Gilbert has bleeped this up again and has tuned out LeBron and the diva that LeBron is, it's amusing. It probably won't work out, but it's fun for Wolves fans to actually be in the conversation.
That's just
for
it. It's a lot of us pipe dreaming. We're going to get Kyrie Irving. But just to be in the conversation of that, I was thinking the other night, and this is a little bit off track, but as far as inept franchise, professional franchises go, where are the Wolves?
Oh, right near the top of the bottom. I mean, again, they have advanced past the first round one time in their history. And they first started
playing 30-year history.
They first started playing in 1989.
Yeah,
I mean that's hard to do, even if you're trying to avoid passing the first round. So yeah, I mean, if you told me all of a sudden your trio for the next 4 or 5 years was Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, and Karl Anthony Towns, sign me up. And yeah, Andrew could turn into a great player in those other areas. That's still a projection. This guy's the real deal right now. 9 past 1, Bob Crowell moments. Ever since the news came out of the shooting of Justine Damon, there has been so many moving pieces in reaction to the tragedy. Most importantly, what happened that particular night from a 911 call. Was there a loud sound? What caused the shooting? Why has Muhammad Noor decided, which is well within his legal right, and something that certainly the legal representation of this show, Joe Friedberger, said repeatedly, any lawyer that would tell Noor to speak should be disbarred, but he's not talking. You had some of the information coming out about the BCA. You had question marks raised towards the mayor of Minneapolis, to then police chief of Minneapolis, Jhené Hartou. And another busy weekend went on Friday. It was clear that Betsy Hodges has decided enough was enough and basically told Jhené Hartou, either you quit or I'm firing you. She stepped down. Then Betsy Hodges has a press conference that was disrupted many times by people chanting bye-bye Betsy. You now have the appointment of an interim police chief awaiting final approval. And a man we chatted with many times before is talking to us for the first time since the story broke. The head of the Minneapolis Police Union, Bob Crowell, is kind enough to join us. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Do you agree with the decision? Do you think it was time for Jhené Hartou to step down?
I do agree with the decision, Chad. However, I don't agree with the motive. The thing here that people need to realize is this is Betsy Hodges' attempt to breathe life into her reelection campaign. She's struggling in the campaign. She's behind, and this is more about Betsy Hodges than it is about running the police department. And the trouble with the police department is Betsy has tried to micromanage it and run it all this time. And we can go back to the takeover of the 4th Precinct and the shutdown of Plymouth Avenue to the appointment and unappointment of John DeMonico as 4th Precinct Inspector. Betsy's been micromanaging the department to our detriment. So I feel for incoming Chief Arredondo if he has to work under those circumstances.
What convinces you most, if this wasn't an election year, that Jhené Hartou would still be the police chief?
I don't think there's any question. She would have let her continue because Jhené was doing whatever Betsy told her to do for all practical purposes. It was kind of a slap in the face. I think they would have allowed her to fill out her term. I mean, her term is up next year, so we're talking less than 18 months. And if this was an election year, they would just let her go out. And I'm sure Jhené was not even be seeking reappointment. I do agree with that. It was more than time for a change, but people got to be cautious of the motive of Hodges in this.
So if Jhené Hartou was following the marching orders of the mayor, do you know of specific areas where Chief Hartou, when she was the chief, wanted to do things differently And would you have agreed more with the way Hartel wanted to pursue that?
Well, you know, most recently was the appointment of John Del Monaco to the 4th Precinct Inspector, and where I didn't agree with that appointment, I know that she was at odds with the mayor on it. And then going back to the way the entire seizure, the takeover for 18 days of the 4th Precinct and the shutdown of Plymouth Avenue was handled, you got to think back. Those were the mayor's supporters that were out there in protest. And what we're seeing right now, that shutdown of her press conference, her people have turned on her. Her campaign is in extreme trouble. But those are two of the most glaring examples of Jhené Hartou not running the police department and Betsy Hodges running it for her. And we've got to leave the politics out of policing. You've got to find a chief that is competent and let them have the reins and go forth. And, you know, incoming Chief Arredondo is a very nice man. He's a well-respected and intelligent man. I'm confident he'd do a good job, but I'm not confident under Betsy Hodges that he'll be allowed to.
Okay, so if you find out last Friday that Jhené Hartou is out and somebody sounds you out and it's going to be somebody within the police department itself is going to be named the interim and hopefully permanent chief, would you have selected the individual that Betsy Hodges picked, Arredondo?
That's a very tough question. I think he's the best suited right now because of where he's at with this current administration. But he's got to have free reign to change. I would definitely make some top level changes if I were him coming in.
What would you do?
But I think he's gonna do. He's the guy right now for the interim. I'm sure they're gonna do a chief selection, and it's all gonna be up. You know, we're gonna probably have a new mayor elected in November, and they're gonna take over in January. And I think that should be the call of the new mayor going forward. And if it's Arredondo, that's great, and I would fully support it. But I think that should be up to whoever takes over as mayor. And maybe if Betsy Hodges gets reelected, she would not stay with Arredondo. I don't know. But
let me ask you this. What changes would you make then?
What changes? If I were chief for a day, who would I have? My command staff wouldn't look like in a lot of areas like it is.
And what policies would you implement that are different than what has been taking place?
We could talk a long time about policies. One thing, speaking of policy, there's been a lot of talk, and I cannot go into any type of detail on the officer nor shooting, but one thing we do need to know is the body camera policy was followed in that circumstance, and that was misreported. If you read our policy, and it's available online, the officers in the squad car that night were in compliance with the body cam policy, so that doesn't need fixing, and there's a lot of talk about that right now, and if we go back and negotiate further changes, because we, the Federation, worked in collaboration with the administration on developing that body camera policy. And I think it's good for us in the end, and it's a good PR tool for us also. But I don't know so much policies need to be changed. I guess if I had to pick one to be changed, it would be de-escalation. You cannot have your cops constantly running, retreating from people. I mean, it is at times a violent profession, and sometimes force has to be met with force. And I can give examples of past occurrences where officers tried to de-escalate and people ended up getting hurt. And the reason they de-escalate is they're in fear of their jobs.
So do you think right now, because a lot of people are going to hear that, and you know this, are going to think that's a mistake. You think that right now there is too much of an emphasis by the Minneapolis police of trying to de-escalate things as opposed to meeting them head on?
Well, I think de-escalation is always an option. However, they've changed a use of force policy where it requires you. I mean, we had a big to-do about that, a big dust-up a month or so ago, where if anything happens that goes bad that you self-initiated, you're liable for it. Well, I don't think people want their neighborhoods policed that way. There's been some things that the city council has done in the past where they decriminalize lurking with intent to commit a crime. You know, we've talked about these things. If I was chief, I would certainly implement a traffic division. We used to have about 50 officers in a traffic division that were out doing, you know, protecting people from driving. Distracted driving is a huge problem right now. I would certainly implement a full-time citywide patrol function where you can rapidly deploy people to areas that need it rather than stripping the precincts. I would get people off, new recruits, we got about 30 of them now, off foot beats where they're supposed to be just talking and engaging with the community. Meanwhile, the other shift members are getting run ragged, going call to call. community-oriented policing is done at every level. Every level of your interactions, you just need the right amount of staff to do that. And right now, our 911 patrol officers are at bare bones. We are 30 officers under our authorized strength, which should never happen. You need to plan for retirements and attrition, and you need to plan for filling those vacancies back. We're at authorized strength is 877, and it should be a couple hundred more than that to begin with. So there's no excuse for running below, and we were running below 30 people. That's ridiculous.
Lieutenant, hold on a second, because you raised a number of very important points. Let me squeeze in a two-minute break. Lieutenant Bob Kroll, head of the Minneapolis Police Union, is with us. Many other points to get to. We're back after this short pause. It's 23 past 1. Let's continue our conversation with Lieutenant Bob Kroll from the Minneapolis Police, the head of the Minneapolis Police Union. Let me ask you this, and you can answer as much as you can, but on this show and elsewhere over the last few years, when there have been very important matters involving police officers and shootings, you have been very outspoken in your defense, and much to the dismay of Janae Harto and Betsy Hodges and maybe city council members, they've asked you to stay quiet, and you've said, nope, that's not my role. In this case, you have decided to stay quiet. Why this time are you quiet when other times you felt like it was the position you had as the head of the union and you felt that you agreed with it and you felt like you should speak out, and this time you're not?
Yes, and it all has to do with the individual cases. They're case specific, and these set of circumstances are vastly different than other ones. The key component is the officer and his attorney at this point have not given a statement. And if they're declining to give any type of statement at all, it would be inappropriate for me to do so. And when you look at the circumstances, I mean, probably the most glaring is the Jamar Clark incident. This case, you've got a 911 female caller that was, reporting suspicious activity. She wanted to investigate and ends up losing her life. It's a tragic circumstance, is an understatement. So when you look at Jamar Clark, we've got a 24-year-old man that had been arrested 23 times. And if the judge had not deviated and made his sentence lighter, he would have been in jail rather than having that encounter with our officers on that unfateful night. He should have been in jail. And what he should have been in jail for was lighting his estranged girlfriend's home on fire with her two small children in it. And they were called that night when he had assaulted another girlfriend and was interfering with paramedics treating her. So the circumstances are vastly different. But most importantly, I was briefed by the attorney on what the officers were telling him and providing in their statement. And I don't have that case. I don't have that situation in this case. I have spoke with Officer Noor almost on a daily basis. The same thing with his attorney, Tom Plunkett, and this is where they're deciding to go forth. And when our legal defense team comes in, they dictate the scenario. I was in close consultation with Fred Bruno, who represented the officers and Jamar Clark, and our press release was done in collaboration that time.
Can you give us any insight into the mindset and how Officer Noor is holding up since all of this has taken place?
Obviously, it's a devastating for him. So he's very upset. He's issued a statement to talk to about those facts, and that's about it. That's about all I can do is just check in with him and see if he needs anything. Obviously, he's been getting death threats and things like that, and it's a difficult circumstance, to say the least.
Observations from people, including some who normally do not agree with you, have said part of the reason why Lieutenant Kroll is not speaking up this time is the different racial makeup of the individuals involved. How do you respond to that?
That's certainly not true. I've defended all of our members, race aside. We've got one color on the MPD, and it's blue.
Do you have any concerns about the fast-track training program that also involved Officer Noor ascending as quick as he did within the police department?
I've addressed this in different places. There was no fast track. I completely agree with the administration in their explanation. We have three ways to be a Minneapolis police officer. One is the one that is utilized throughout the state. Basically, you go to your two-year college, you get your degree, you take a post-licensing test for the state, then you go to your skills, which is a generalized police academy, take your post license, you're eligible for hire. That's how every other agency works, and that used to be our only and main way to funnel officers in. Since then, we go back 28 years. In fact, I think Chief Arredondo, who came on about 6 months after me, was a product of our cadet program. And there's nothing wrong with that program. I do have some issues with it, but it's not a fast track. Basically, with the cadet program that Officer Noor came under, you have a four-year degree in anything, and you're looking to decide to change careers or for whatever reason want to become a police officer. It gives you just the police courses. They leave out all the other generals because you have them. So they give the general police courses in college, but you're employed by the department while you do it. And then they send you through the skills course while you're also employed. So it's really no fast tracking. It's not a shortcut. They get the same training going through. And then the last way is the community service officer program. And that's ideal. That's ideally for very young people just out of high school, and they hire them on as community service officers to do various job duties. And in this case, they pay for their college and their skills course while they're employed by the city. And those are both, it's geared for diversity recruitment. That's why we have them. But it's not a fast tracking. Again, the cadet program that Officer Noor came on has been around for 28 years, and many of our command staff are products of the cadet program right now.
Last thing, you said earlier that you felt like that these two officers were in compliance with the body camera policy as it stands now. Do you think an adjustment should be made that going forward, once any officer or officers are sent out on a specific call, that body cameras should be turned on then?
Well, we'd be happy to negotiate that with the city and put it together. There's some restrictions that what the product allows you to do. The officers cannot have it running for 10 hours a day. It's not designed that way. The batteries will wear out. It won't recover. So we collectively, the administration and federation, came up with what we thought is a workable body cam policy. And in this case, they were dispatched to a call and they were driving through and listening. I mean, if they want to turn them on when they go to the call, we can talk about that. I wouldn't be necessarily against that. But there's conversations that go on with officers in the car in route to these situations that maybe they want to keep, to themselves. That shouldn't be out there, tactics, whatever, because of all the body cam stuff can be requested data and recovered through data practice and viewed. I think it's a good tool, but I don't think unless you're interacting with anyone, you should have it on.
Lieutenant, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Head of the Minneapolis Police Union, Lieutenant Bob Kroll. The headline in the local section of the Star Tribune, I think, captures it well. Warsami blasts anti-Somali rhetoric. The city council member, Abdi Warsami, is kind enough to join us here on a Monday. Council member, I appreciate your time. I want to get to a number of issues, including I want you to react to something the head of the police union, Bob Kroll, just said to me in the last 10 minutes. He believes that when the two officers were involved in the call, which tragically ended in the death of Justine, that they were in the right and that the body cameras should not have been on. Do you agree with that? Do you think they were correct in that decision?
Good afternoon, Chad. My reaction to that is no. I think the cameras should have been on, especially when you go to such an incident. The cameras should have been on, and I'm looking with my colleagues to review our camera policy. What's the point of having cameras if they're not going to be on in such incidents?
Do you think there is a gray area right now, and that's part of what you're looking to do, Opti, is try to clear that up so going forward there's no uncertainty? That is clear what the officers need to do and when they should do it.
Yes, I agree. I think there's a gray area. I think this is new technology. The web cameras have only been on for – the body cameras have only been on for about a year or so. But I think there is a gray area that needs to be cleared up, and we should clear it up.
You were very specific yesterday and detailed in pointing out what you feel like was unjust, harsh, and cruel criticism towards people within the Somali community after the shooting of Justine Damon and the accusations towards Mohamed Noor. Mm-hmm. Why did you finally decide yesterday was the appropriate time to speak out?
You know, I think we must seek truth from facts. You know, my office has been monitoring this situation and this incident and just gathering data and gathering facts. And once we saw that the issue became not about policing, not about, you know, the fact that a police officer sitting in Minneapolis was part of this incident and part of this tragedy, and not about Justine Diamond and her family, and it became, you know, a way of attacking and marginalizing a community in our city. I mean, that's what we had to speak up. For me, it's about police reform. It's about accountability, and it's also about justice for Justine.
The tragic thing, sir, is the internet, Facebook, mm-hmm. and other outlets where people either anonymously or can put their names on it, which is even worse, can be a cesspool of hate. It just can't. I mean, it can be magnificent. It also can be rooms for cowards or people who have just animus, which can be racial, mm-hmm. gender. And sadly, I'm sure you face too much of this. Why did you feel like that it had reached a point where you wanted to be more specific in what you said yesterday, as opposed to, you know, that public figures just have to put up with that?
You know, I mean, I put up with a lot of nonsense. You know, people always write stuff about me. They call our office and swear and make threats to us. You know, I can put up. I'm a grown up. I can put up with that. But when this is about a whole community, when children are afraid, when women are afraid, when elders are afraid, and when the issue is no longer about the main topic, which is policing, which is about violence in our society, which is about, you know, the gun culture that we have in this city, in this culture, in this country, I think that's when one has to speak up and one has to have the courage, to say what this issue is. This is a Minneapolis police officer. And if I take you back a little bit, Chad, in 2002, there was an incident where there was a Somali man was gunned down by police officers around Chicago and Franklin. So this community is a community that has experienced this issue of police-related shootings. And today the fact that the officer is from the Somali community is not the issue. You know, his race, his religion means nothing. He was a police officer from the city of Minneapolis. And we need to find the facts, and we need to find justice for Justine. And also, you know, he's also a citizen of the United States, and we are a nation of laws, and we make sure that this is going to be settled at the courts.
What do you want to say specifically to former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann regarding the comments she made Thursday, which certainly gained a lot of traction Friday throughout mm-hmm. town, including on this show?
I mean, I would say to Michelle, you know, Michelle, you know, I'm not going anywhere. This is my city. This is my state. This is my country. You know, I love Minneapolis. I love the state of Minnesota. You know, I've chosen to raise my children here. All my three children were born here, and I'm expecting a daughter at the end of the month. She will also be born here. So, you know, we're not going anywhere. And if she's not happy, maybe she should leave.
Is there anything out there whatsoever to justify two of her points, that this was an affirmative action hire, and that there might have been something else behind Mohamed Noor's reasons for the shooting?
I mean, first of all, from what we know is, you know, this officer was an educated man. He went to Augsburg College. He chose, for whatever reason, to join the police department. And there is no affirmative action route. I think he went through the same program as other officers. And it depends if somebody has a degree or if they don't. But there are programs that were designed for officers, and he went through that program just like everybody else. And again, affirmative action is a racist term. You know, it just means that people of color are just taking advantage of the system, which is not true in this case. The fact of his religion, I don't think he knew who Justine was, and I don't think Justine knew who he was. This was an incident. It happened very quickly, and we need to find the facts. It's a tragic incident, and we need justice for Justine. And I think her, you know, Michelle Bachmann's points, it's not helping the Diamond family. It's not helping Justine, and it's not helping the city of Minneapolis. I think she's just trying to, maybe she wants to run for something in 2018, and she's thinking that the more Islamophobic she is and the more vitriol her rhetoric is, that she might get some votes.
Minneapolis City Council member Abdi Warsami is with us. Okay, so let's talk police.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the decision that Betsy Hodges made by basically telling Jhené Harto, either you resign or I'm going to fire you?
I think there was a lot of pressure on the chief, on the former chief. The council on that day, on Monday, in no uncertain terms, asked for some changes to be made. So yeah, I agree with that we need change. But I agree that we need fundamental change. I don't think we need systematic change. We need cultural change within the police department. We need to make sure that our police are accountable to our residents, that the police serve and protect the residents of the city of Minneapolis, that we don't get an incident like this incident. This tragic incident could have been prevented, and I think, the body cameras should have been on. I think that they should have had their lights on. I think that there's a lot of things that when I just read the reports kind of stand out, but the main thing is we've had these incidents before. We had Jamal Clark. We had Philando Castile. I think it's just too much. Every other year, we're having a police shooting in the Twin Cities, and I think that's what we need to change.
Do you agree with the selection of the interim police chief, Madera Arredondo? He certainly has long experience. He is someone who's served in different parts, but others, a council member, say that what Minneapolis needs is somebody from the outside, a fresh look. Which way would you rather go?
I agree with him being the interim chief. I haven't spoken to the new chief yet. I hope he is an agent of change. I know him. I've worked well with him in the past. He's a very talented man, a talented individual. And, I want to talk to him before I make any judgment or I make any statement. But we need change. I hope he is the agent of change that we're looking for. But, just having a new chief doesn't mean anything. What we need is, greater representation within the police department. We need change within the police department. We need accountability within the police department. And I hope Rondo is the person to bring that.
Last thing, sir, for the folks who are listening to this right now, and they say, we've heard this before, that a tragic event happens, and it doesn't always then involve the replacement of the police chief, so that is unique. But individuals like yourself, many respected like yourself, will say, we need change, but in the end, nothing does change. Why should citizens in Minneapolis feel like that it shouldn't have involved the death of someone, but that finally this is going to lead to some specific changes where, one, it's a safer city, and two, the relationship between the citizens and the police is better?
I can only promise what I can do, which is I'm going to work very hard to, hold the police department accountable. I'm going to work very hard to make changes for our city. I'm a first-term council member, and since I've been on the council, there has been a change in my ward. My ward is much safer than it has ever been in the past. And we've been very proactive in building a relationship between the communities in our ward and the police department. We need to continue doing that. We need to make sure we're innovative in our solutions, and we need to empower the residents to take responsibility for public safety. It should be our residents and our constituents in our wards who would guide us and direct us into what policing should be. And I am somebody who grew up in a large city. I grew up in London, England, where the police didn't even carry firearms. Yes, we have different culture. We have the Second Amendment here. We have the right to bear arms in the United States. And that, complicates things. But we do not have, it doesn't have to be our destiny to live with gun violence. And it doesn't have to be our destiny that there is a rupture between our police department and our communities. And I will work my best to make sure that Justine's tragedy is not just another tragedy, but that we have substantial change within our police department.
Councilmember, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Chad. Have a wonderful day.
You also. Abdi Warsami, kind enough to join us. 53 past 1. That is your Linda's Construction Time Check. Time to stop the water in your basement with LeafGuard brand gutters. All right, let's get to a number of techs reacting to the conversations with the head of the police union and city council member. Dan, this comes up a lot. Whatever happened to shooting to stop instead of shooting to kill? The officers are not trained that way. I mean, it's not TV.
It doesn't happen. It's never really existed. You don't shoot for, you shoot center mass. That's the way every police officer in every department across the country is trained now. You don't shoot to try and wing somebody or shoot a gun out of their hand or any other nonsense you see it from Hollywood. It just
that isn't to justify the decision-making here, but when shots are then fired, it's not in the calf to slow the person down.
Right.
There's just as much reason to remove the mayor and head of the police union as there is to remove the chief. Well, that's up to the union to decide, and they just voted Bob Kroll back, and then the citizens of Minneapolis get a chance on Betsy Hodgson. How can he talk about Abdi Warsami? How can he speak about police procedures? Does he have a degree in law enforcement? He's a member of the city council. He should be involved in these decisions, and then it's up to you to decide to get, be active involved in agreeing or disagreeing with their decisions. Somebody says disappointed about what that I'm mischaracterizing what Bob Kroll said about body cameras. I'm not. In fact, he confirmed it. He said the body cameras did not have to be on and affirmed it later in the interview.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.